This is a message from Acast.
We don't all get a good innings in life. I'm Andrew Strauss, and I lost my wife, Ruth, to cancer in 2018. One of the hardest things about an incurable cancer diagnosis is talking to your children about it. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is here to help. We support parents to prepare their children to face grief. You can help. Join in our Red for Ruth fundraising campaign. At the Ruth Strauss Foundation, we believe no family should have to face grief alone.
Women are peace builders. Women are humanitarians. Women are rights defenders. Local women activists in conflict and crisis zones around the world understand their communities and the needs of the most vulnerable groups. Women are the engines of peace, resilience, and humanitarian response across the globe, and they need and deserve the world's attention and support. The United Nations Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund is calling on the world to meet the critical needs and support the transformational impact of local women's organizations working to build a more peaceful and gender-equal world for everyone. Join us today to accelerate funding, amplify the voices, unlock the power, and scale up the impact of women who are responding to crisis and building a lasting peace for all. Learn how you can join the United Nations to support women on the front lines today at wphfund.org/investinwomen.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. This is the episode where myself and Leanne ask each other a series of questions to quite literally dig deep into our sisterhood. For some reason, this sounds like a script because I've been saying it every week, but I think it's because it's the easiest way I know to explain this episode. So if it's your first time, welcome. And if it's not, sit back and relax. All right, so we're going to get straight into it this week. Leanne, how are you? What's on the agenda in the world of Leanne?
I have never been so fucking bomba-rascless hot in my entire life. This is punishment and karma. People, for those of you who are not in Jamaica right now, it is hot as balls. Like, I have never been this hot. I have a scarf on right now. Like, I know, like, I'm trying to make it cute, but literally, I just threw a scarf over my sports bra because this heat is unbearable and I cannot take it anymore. And I'm going to install AC and stop complaining about it. But for anybody who's watching the clips on YouTube or on TikTok or on Instagram, if I look a little bit crazy, it's because I'm sweating buckets and my hair is not working with the humidity. Okay? Just disclaimer.
I didn't think about that because if your hair is straight, it just goes curly, isn't it? Like if you were to straighten it and because it's humid, it would just be really curly.
And right now it's during doing this like crazy growth period where it's growing out. So it's like I can't slick it back into one unless I like douse it with gel. And I also can't let it run free because of the humidity either. So it's a lose-lose situation.
Well, you know, I'd love to feel sorry for you, but I'm sure I'd rather be hot in Jamaica than cold in the UK, you know?
I don't know. I just came back from the UK and I would take the UK weather right now over this heat.
Well,
right?
Like can't be choosers and you're in Jamaica. Yeah. Go to the beach.
So and live with it.
Because I got to be in the house. Oh, I'll be putting my heated on. Gosh.
I would love to go to the beach and swim, but I have work. So you know, maybe on the weekends, yes, I will do that.
Because in this England, we're not going to no beach and swimming with no shark.
Although, let's be clear, I have seen some images on TikTok of places where I'm like, this is not the UK. Like, clear, crystal blue water.
Oh, I saw it. Was it Cotswolds?
I think it's in Cotswolds, yeah. Like, I need to go there immediately.
And it's not far from me. It's like an hour away, I think. Or an hour or two, I think.
When I come back, we're going. Maybe not when I come back, but maybe next year, because by the time I come back, it will be winter.
Yeah, it'll be freezing. I won't be going anywhere. Do you know what I realized recently?
What's that?
I'm a delusional bitch. A delusional bitch. So there's a guy on Instagram and he posts these videos and it's just, I can't explain it. I actually can't give context to the videos. But if anyone can get something from this explainer, he does videos that are maybe like 5 seconds long, 10 seconds long. And it's him like in slow-mo of something and it'll be like, I don't know. I can't think of something to explain it. It might be like point of view, you are that bitch, or point of view, you just bought another mocha latte, even though you had no money, but you're living life on the edge. Like, he just does so many funny videos. And I realized that every single video he does, I can relate to. But his whole brand is all about being delusional. And I realized I'm a delusional bitch. And let me tell you why. So the other day, I was at work and I've got one of those alarm systems so I can see what's going on in front of my house on my phone, yeah? So the doorbell rings.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, oh, got a big parcel. And I'm like, oh, I didn't order anything. What's going on here? And the parcel was big and I saw a sign saying fragile. So I was thinking, what is this that someone's decided to treat me with? And I'm talking to the postman through my phone, yeah? As we're having this conversation, there's a lady that's got on the lift with me and she's like, oh, what's that then? Like, you know, like just office chat. What's that? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like a parcel's come to my house. And she's like, what do you think it is? And I'm like, I think it's flowers. Like, I actually think someone has sent me flowers. And it's, I was like, I can't wait to get home and open it. This, by the way, was probably like 9:30, 9:36. And she's like, oh, do you think your boyfriend sent you flowers? I'm like, oh, no. She's like, oh, like a friend? I'm like, no. And she's like, so who do you think the flowers are from? And it was at that point where I was like, I'm so single.
But they sent flowers.
And nobody's sending me flowers. But yeah, I've convinced myself there's flowers in those in that box. And so I was gassed. Yeah, I was happy. Couldn't wait to go home. When I came home, I was like skipping. Came home. You know when you open a box and you're excited, so you don't even open it up. You just mash up the box. Like,
yeah.
Just try to open it anyhow. You know when I opened it? Guess what was inside? Guess.
Something you had ordered?
It was freezer drawers. The most underwhelming thing it could be, it was freezer drawers.
That's because hilarious.
I called my insurance and said, can you send some new ones? And I forgot about it. Imagine thinking you're coming home for surprise flowers. And imagine deep down in your delusional big head, there's someone that you thought may have been reaching out via flowers. And actually, it's freezer drawers. It's humbling. It is humbling.
So, funny story. I once got flowers. I used to send flowers to myself, you know, every now and again, make myself feel good. And then I said, there was this guy that I was talking to. I said, let me trick him and let me see what he's going to say. So I took a picture of the flowers and said, babes, you sent me flowers? And he was like, yeah, babes, I did. And I was like, look at this fucking liar telling me that he sent me flowers when he knows damn well that he did not send flowers to me. So anyway, time passed. I'm waiting on him to be like, no, it wasn't me, Leanne. And I said to him, I said, you know, you didn't send me the flowers. And he's like, Leanne, I promise you, you didn't get them. Like, I sent flowers to you. He was like, I'll call them. Let me get them to resend it. I'll look for the receipt and da 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 da. And I was like, did he really send me flowers? And it's just a random coincidence. Of course he didn't.
Girl, he did send the flowers.
No, delusional. He definitely did not. But he was living in that truth. He was like, yes, I did. Even though he must have known that I knew that he was lying.
Yeah, I have this all the time. The other day, I was with my dad and he was acting like really suspicious about, I need to see him look good, but going this place. I was like, it's a proposal. It's a proposal. Someone has messaged my dad, asked for my hand in marriage, and we're now going to the surprise proposal. And I was convinced. I'm in the car like looking for secret cameras. There was none. And so I've realized recently that I'm really delusional, and I'm loving it. I'm loving being delusional.
Living that delusional life. I mean, sometimes you have to do. Speaking of delusional, and no shade to Queenie, but have you been watching that show?
Oh, the actual show, Queenie? Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait, I thought you meant Queen Lady Gangster.
Okay, I haven't watched it yet either, but would love to. Oh, no.
Because she's been up and popping on TikTok Live recently. That's what I thought you were talking about.
Oh, no. But she is also delusional, let's be clear.
She's so funny. Talk about Pretty Flat.
I cannot. Let's dig deep, yo. Let's dig deep.
Let's dig deep. Okay. I'm going to go straight into it. I feel like this question is definitely a bit of you.
Okay.
If you could create a new law that everyone in the world had to follow, ooh, what would it be and why?
I'm already excited. If I could create a new law that everyone had to follow, can I make two?
If you could create a new law. But seeing as every time you ask me a singular question, I respond in a list of 2, 3, 4, 5. Go ahead with two laws.
One, let me not be selfish. Don't be selfish, Leanne. Don't be selfish. These seem like very minor things, but they're very important. And I'm sure we'll talk about them at some other point in the podcast. But I would make access to abortion free and legal and subsidized by the government in every single country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fight me if you want to, but that's how I feel. And I would also see, I feel like I want to say something about taxes. I'm just going to leave it at free access to abortion.
Okay. I think that's an important one. Because I remember when there was a law being passed, I could be wrong. Excuse me. Either in Ireland, Northern Ireland, some of them man over there. Mm-hmm. And it was a real big issue. And at the time, I was kind of like, surprised, I suppose, that this was even a thing that was happening in whatever year it was, 2018, 2019. But what made me actually really deep the magnitude of this conversation or of this like policy or whatever at the time, this law, was that access, not having access to abortion doesn't actually get rid of them. It actually just 100%. Puts women in more...
At greater risk
of fuckery, basically, on so many different levels. So I don't know if you saw the other day, there's this stuff going on in the UK where there was an abandoned baby found. I can't remember what area it was. Let's say it wasn't this area, but let's say it was Brixton, yeah? And the DNA shows that baby is the full sibling of two other abandoned children that had been found in neighbouring areas of Brixton. And so there was a conversation online around, okay, cool, this baby's been abandoned, but the fact that it's been abandoned by the same mum and dad on three occasions, as in like three separate children, there's a bigger issue here. Like, does the person not have access to abortion? Is the person being held against their own risk? Is this person kidnapped? Like, are they living in, like, what is it? What's the reason why they keep being forced to do that? Do you get what I mean? There's a deeper issue there.
Yeah.
And it made me think of that. Maybe they come from a family where you're not allowed to have, I'm not saying that's better than an abortion, but do you get what I mean? Like, they, I feel like there's something in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other episode that requires a level of patience and tolerance that I don't have in me right now, because it's something that I'm extremely passionate about. And I just think people should mind their own business.
Mm-hmm.
And women and everybody else should be allowed to do whatever they want to do. And if I have my body, my choice, you know? So, yeah, that's the law that I would change. Okay. Or, yeah, that's the law that I would create that everybody had to adhere to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a question.
Well, don't. Just tell me.
What is the biggest lie you tell yourself to this day?
Oh, I think the biggest lie I tell myself is that I can't do something.
Oh, okay.
Because there's nothing I've told myself I couldn't do that I've tried and haven't been able to do it. There's absolutely not one thing. But yeah, that lie is a blocker in a lot of...
Yeah, things. I was going to say, what do you attribute that immediate, like, I can't do this to?
Fair or failing.
Mm.
Fair or failing.
Massive one.
If it was a triangle, fair or failing at the top. Maybe anxiety is in the bottom left. And then maybe in the bottom right, it would be confidence. But I feel like it's more fair or failing and anxiety. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I think that's what it is. Or like fair or failing or fear of looking stupid. Because even like the candle business I spoke to you about the other day, I've done so much research on it. And the other day I was like, right, imagine if I really like put all this effort in, launch it and...
It doesn't work out. But then I guess the question is, it's funny because I remember going to do this, I was going to moderate this conversation. I was talking to my girlfriend, Jalene. And I was like, this is a big deal. Suppose I fuck this up, right? And she was like, so what if you fuck it up? What happens next? And I was like...
You know what? You know, you're like...
exactly.
You're right.
But exactly.
The world will continue spinning.
The world will continue spinning. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean the end of my career. It doesn't mean the end of anything. It just means that I fucked up. And then what?
Mm.
And so I try to, even though it doesn't necessarily work all the time, I try to do more and more of that. Like, okay, what happens if I fuck up? Then that's it. You do pick up yourself and do something else, you know?
I like that. Because even in answering that myself to this situation, like what happens if I fucked up? Well, I still tried and I still had fun doing it. And actually, I think the candle business is actually more about something for myself than actually for others. I just think it will benefit others, but I actually think it's more about me. It's more about me doing research and like going on a journey of like aromatherapy and like well-being and anxiety with scents, and then like making products from it, which benefits me and it may benefit others.
I can't wait to use your new candles.
Yes. Okay.
Very excited.
My next question is, what's a belief or opinion that you've had that has changed over the last 5 years? And when you think of what that is and tell us, what caused the shift?
Oh.
I feel like 5 years might be hard. So maybe let me say.
Ever in life?
No, because then you might do something silly from when you was like, oh, I believed in Santa Claus. Let me say in the last 10 years.
The last 10 years. For the record, I've never believed in Santa Claus, which is quite sad, I think.
It was always Duffy, all right?
No, my parents were like, fuck Santa Claus. We bought you these gifts.
Yeah.
Thank me. What is a belief that I had that I've shifted on? Wow. I don't want to... How do I say this? I'm going to say it, but I might need to change my answer. Let me see how I feel once I've said it.
Okay.
I used to categorize myself. I used to say, I hate to generalize. Don't like to say all men are trash. It's not something I like to do because I think, you know, especially for Black men, they're part of my community. I want them to succeed. And I realize that two things can be true at the same time. Like, I do want Black men to succeed, and I do want Black men to come on this journey with us of healing and restoration. But y'all are fucking shit, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys make it so difficult to help you. You make it so difficult to help you win. Like, help me help you. You know what I mean? I remember somebody said on Twitter one day, they were like, oh, it was Sean Paul. Let me go through my mini rant. Sean Paul said that he was upset about the beef between Steph London and Jada Kingdom, right? Mm. Which for me, I just thought it was just like, yo, these music two beef. Girls are going at yeah. it, and it's music beef and it's lyrical genius. Like, some of the disses that Jada Kingdom came out with are some of the best disses I've ever heard in dancehall, woman or man, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he was like, oh, women are supposed to be better than men, and women are supposed to lead men, and how are we supposed to be better if you're not better? So your well-being and your capacity to be a good person is dependent on my capacity to be a good person. And if you fuck up, that means it's ultimately my fault.
Mm.
GTFOH.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, like, I feel like I've cursed too much on this episode already. Sorry. Like, but it really infuriates... It really infuriates me. Like, why must I be this, like, holier than thou,
yeah.
Mother Teresa, I'm going to fix all of your problems, when you're one in three of us are being beat the shit out of by a man, but it's never your friends, right? When men are disproportionately doing worse in terms of bringing in income, I must date the bus driver, I must date anybody who is willing to show me a little bit of love
yeah.
just because they're a man and they love me. No, it's not good enough. And I just feel like women are out here. I don't know a single Black woman, and I'm going to use Black women specifically because that's what the space is for. I don't know a single Black woman who is just fucking about. Either they're on their hustle, they're trying to support their man, they're trying to support themselves, they're doing something by way of their children. They are working on themselves and genuinely trying to be their most authentic selves. It's actually a movement and a wave within our community now. And I just don't know many men that are doing the same. And when they are doing it, they're performative. And it really just infuriates me. Sorry, rant is over.
So I have a few points to respond to. The first point is that I think it's absolutely fine to acknowledge and accept and say that two things can be true at the same time, because they can. I think the only way in which sometimes it then, particularly with what you were talking about, it can cause a backlash is when people assume that you're saying, and I know you're not saying it in this way, that when you do the other side, you're saying it in a way of like all Black men, because obviously it's not all Black men. Or
no, I definitely sometimes, not.
And this is based on like something I saw on Shadeborough the other day, people were like, why are we saying it's a Black man issue, and it's also happened in white communities? And just for the point of this podcast and people listening, because this podcast is aimed at Black women and our closest proximity is Black men, that's why we're having that conversation in that way, because we're aware that it also applies to white communities, Asian communities, yeah. and other people as well.
100%. But let me be even clearer or even more explicit about this. One, you know that I don't have many white friends, full yeah. stop. I don't know what's happening in white communities outside of what I hear on the news, because I just don't live in that world,
mm-hmm.
right? I love, there's a quote by James Baldwin where he's talking about America, and he's like, I love this country more than anything in the world. And because I love it so much, I reserve the right to criticize it perpetually. And I feel the same way about Black men and my community in general. Like, I love my community so much that I am willing to step out on a limb and be the villain in order to criticize and call people out, and have people call me out, have my own community call me out, because I accept that in order to grow, I need to be criticized. It's why we criticize governments. It's why we criticize our friends. And criticize is maybe a wrong word, but provide constructive feedback. You know,
no, I know what you mean, but I just think it's a balance. It's a balancing act of like criticizing individuals rather than the entire group,
for sure. But I can, you can also still say that generally, statistically, Black women are disproportionately at risk of abuse, and that usually comes of
men
at the hands of and Black yeah. men, because 99% of sexual assault, etc., is usually enacted by someone that you know or someone that's yeah. close to you.
On BBC One Extra the other day, BBC One Extra Talk specifically, they did an episode on femicide, and they touched on this exact topic of like the femicide rates being so high. And I think in 2023, mm-hmm. the rates became 43% representative of Black women, and that most of those crimes were perpetrated by Black men.
I live in a country that has the second highest rate of femicide in the world. And I live in a country that is 98% Black. Women are being killed at the hands of men at a rate in this small island that is at a higher rate than anywhere else in the world. I can't ignore that and not hold Black men accountable.
Mm.
You can't, you know what I mean? I can't ignore the stories that I know where men are cheating on women, people who are in Black-on-Black relationships, that sounds like Black-on-Black crime, but they're experiencing Black relationships. And I see them, we see it all the time, right? Stereotypes are not fair, but they exist for a reason, right? And also all of the memes that so many of us connect with, where it's like, oh, the struggle love and the idea that people are really, you know, when they engage in, there's something broken about our community. I'm not blaming Black men, but I think I see in our community and I want better for all of our community, and that includes Black men. And whereas I see so many Black women doing the work, and I know some incredible, great, amazing Black men, I do think that, like, as a community, there's more that Black men need to
can do.
And that's, yeah.
And also, I think, I'm not going to divulge into this here. This is more between me and you. But it will probably be relatable to people listening, is that sometimes there'll be Black men who seem like they're at the forefront of communities doing things. And behind closed doors, they're doing a complete another thing, which goes against the same thing they're trying to represent and stand for. But I'll leave that at that. And if you have the tea, you have the tea, darling, sip up. But the other thing I was going to say, in regards to your point of like Black women and like being authentic and, you know, being go-getters, like not just like doing nothing, is that I have the same view, yeah. But I've realized recently that this is actually my echo chamber of women that I'm surrounded by.
Mm.
So I was really in denial for a long time when I would hear men be like, oh, girls just like man for money, like man for bags, like man for this. And the reason why I was so in denial about that is because I don't have friends that are like that in the slightest. Yeah.
True.
All my friends have their own. None of my friends... my friends are probably all, unfortunately, like, to our detriment, skewing to the side of, like, hyper-independence. Yeah. So
yeah.
This idea of bopsing man for money and food and drinks is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I've actually spoken to men about their experiences, a lot of them have countless stories from women that have treated them poorly, Black women that have treated them poorly, or Black women who aren't like what you described. And so I think that I'm saying that not even to challenge that view, because I've held that same view for a long time. But just to say, sometimes when you talk to these men, you'll be very, very surprised, because the more and more I talk to them and hear stories, the more I'm like, what do you mean? Even I was talking to, these are two very short stories. I was talking to a guy and I remember he told me he moved to a girl and they went on a date. And after the date, the girl's asking him to send her money. And it was something stupid. Yeah, like, yeah, to send her money. And I was thinking, why does she feel comfortable doing that? But then he did send her the money. So I'm like, okay, well, here we are. And then another guy I was talking to, and he was like, yeah, I moved to this girl. We didn't even get to go on the date yet. And she started sending me bags, asking me to buy the bags for her.
Wow.
So that's, I know, crazy. These are really small, trivial examples.
No, but it's comfortable point. Sharing
on the pod. But you get what I mean? Like, I feel like what we are, I feel like sometimes, like, you know, they say birds of a feather flock together. There's only going to be so many bad eggs in proximity to you when you're at a certain level, or you're at a certain standard, or you operate with certain morals or certain levels of authenticity. Because some of these girls, honestly, they're living the high life on the internet, but the high life is bought by all these weird men and they get shat on their face in Dubai.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, they are.
You're right, and I take that point. I stand corrected. It may be because I'm in my own bubble and that's where I live, and this is true. I don't know that life. I honestly can say that I have never held out my hand to a man and asked them for anything.
No, but I'm gonna stop. Me, I deserve Gucci bag and Gucci shoes, don't I?
There's a woman on Instagram. I don't know if you've ever seen her. She's an African man who's African woman who's dating a white man. And she's just like, she gives like her version of Sierra's prayer. And she's like, shopping for Chanel and Dior, and, you know, I pray that these whiteys will sprinkle on me. And it is hilarious. And then she like shifts her wig slightly back and it's just
I think I've seen it. It was like how to get a rich white man, and she puts her wig back.
Yeah, exactly. So funny. Okay, let me ask you a question. Is it your turn or is it my turn?
Yours.
Okay. What is the most memorable dream you've ever had?
The most memorable dream I've had. So it wasn't a dream, it was a nightmare, but it's basically the same thing. They're sisters, they're cousins, right? And essentially, because it's a long dream, what happened was I was at my grandparents' house, or their old house now, and the house was getting like burgled, and it was by like Snoop Dogg. I think it was either Snoop Dogg or 50 Cent. Because basically, me and my brother have both had this exact same dream. And I haven't had it again in like years. But I used to have this as a recurring dream. And he's had the same dream as well. I think in my one, it was Snoop Dogg. And in his, it was 50 Cent. And basically, at the end of the dream, Snoop Dogg runs over my granddad. Like, he backs the car over him. And you don't ever know, like, if he's dead or not. I just always woke up at that point. So yeah, I guess that's the most memorable. Not because it's the most loveliest or warm or cuddly or kind. Just because that's the one that was traumatic for me as a child. And therefore I remembered it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's weird for two reasons. One, because obviously that's a very traumatic dream to have on a recurring basis. But also it's even weirder that you and your brother both have the same dream. That's the weird part about it. And so there must be some sort of meaning that aligns across both of you.
Do you know what? Yeah, I was talking to my nan a while ago, and she is convinced that like all the women in our family have a sixth sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I'm really, really intuitive. Yeah, like
I was gonna say, you definitely have it. So
my mom's like that. I feel like my nan's like that, and her mom is definitely like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. And she was like, she's convinced the men in the family have it, but they don't tap into it and they run away from it. And so it's interesting because I forgot she said that. And actually, I'm going to talk to my brother about it after this podcast and see if maybe, like, what he thinks about that statement, whether or not he thinks it's true. Because you're right, it probably was to do with something. There's something we both internalized or both had a fear about, whether subconsciously or consciously, that allowed us to have that same dream. But yeah.
On a side note, you just reminded me that I need to message my therapist about my next EMDR session.
Tap, tap, tap. All right, next question. If you could write a letter to your younger self, A, what age would you choose? And why? And B, what advice would you give them?
I would write a letter to my 8-year-old self. And the reason that I choose the letter eight, wow, Leanne. The reason that I choose the age of 8 is because something happened within that time, and this is why I'm doing EMDR, because I don't actually remember what happened, that changed who I was. Like, I remember everybody saying about me, and I don't remember, so this, I'm leaning on other people's memories, that I was quite like precocious and kind of, very active and friendly and all of that kind of stuff. And then I became really reserved and quiet and kind of insular. And I think I remember pieces beyond the age of 8 where I just remember always being self-conscious. And so something happened during that time. And so I think I would say to myself, or what I would say to myself, my 8-year-old self, is don't let them silence you, whatever it is. And I don't even know what it is, but I definitely remember feeling like I didn't have a voice. And so maybe it would be something along the lines of don't let them silence you, or just don't lose yourself. Don't lose your voice. Mm. Like, your voice matters. And that's something that I know now, obviously, but it's something that I think impacted the way I navigated life for a really long time.
I like that. I think that's the advice that can apply to us even now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was talking to a girlfriend of ours the other day and she was like, I just think I'm just finding my voice now. And she's, I don't know, maybe like mid-20s, early 30s.
Yeah,
and
29. It's journey, right? I said 29.
You're so funny. Okay. What is something that you're really passionate about that very few people know?
I'm really passionate about encouraging or helping or facilitating people who once felt like they didn't have a voice to have one. And I'm really passionate about helping people who have been through trauma or dark times to navigate through that and to be able to go from surviving to thriving. And I feel like on my own journey of that, because obviously I relate to both of those things, which is where the passion comes from, I suppose, or to a certain extent, I feel like this year for me, I'm really trying to be intentional about how I shift from survival mode and go to thriving, because I think I've been in survival mode for so long. And I think if I was to be like 10 years from now and look back, I'd probably say to myself, like, oh, I wish she didn't have to operate in survival mode. Because when I look at myself when I was younger, like, sometimes I feel sorry for her and I'm like, fuck, she was just... I'm like, fuck, she was really trying to just get back.
Well, it's good that you can laugh about it now.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like I'm someone who reduces a lot of pain. I don't know if reduces is the right word, but I... Like, I could be talking about trauma, yeah? Or a trauma. And I'm talking about it in such a flippant way because I didn't even deep that was traumatic because I had to just keep going. And the other day I was talking to my auntie, who's a bit younger than me. She's basically like my sister. And she was talking to me about a time at uni and like something she did. And she was like, oh, you know, I had to do this. I was trying to get by. And then I started to tell her a story. And I started telling her the story. I was like, nobody even knows this. But I didn't even ask for help. And actually, when I told my mom and my nan this, I don't think they took me seriously. I think they thought I was joking. Because it was so far-fetched from my character, but it's like it made me think like I was trying to survive at that moment. I didn't know what it looked like to do anything else. And yeah, I just hope everyone can change, and anyone who can relate to that, I hope they don't have to live like that forever.
Do you know what though, there is something about humor and laughter that that is a coping mechanism for grief. Like I remember shortly after my parents passed, I used to, I guess it was a joke, but nobody has found it funny except me. And I'm going to share it now and nobody's going to find it funny except me. But I remember when my mom was passing and we were all, my brother was like on his way. He was like rushing home because we were all by her side when she passed. And my sister and I were kind of waiting and, you know, my brother was on his way, trying to get home. And then my brother came in and, you know, I don't know if you've ever been with someone when they're passing, but, you know, the breathing slows and then it becomes like there's a bigger gap between each breath. Mm-hmm. And so at some point in time, my brother walks in and, you know, we're all talking to mom, telling her that we love her, et cetera, et cetera. And then she stops breathing. And so we all like start crying. See, you're laughing because it's gonna be funny.
No, I'm laughing, yeah, because I went through the same experience with my aunt, and one of my uncles was really inappropriate at the time. And this is what.
But these things happen.
Yeah.
These things happen. So we all start crying, and you know we think it's the time, and then she takes this other like big breath, and we're like, oh fuck, she's still alive. And we all burst out in laughter. And the thing is, it's not funny, but it's funny because if you know my mom, she'd be like, yeah, bitches, not yet. Like, don't think that I'm going without a fight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so we all started laughing. And so when I tell that story, nobody thinks it's funny, but I think it's hilarious.
Do people that were in the room find it funny?
Yeah, people in the room think it's funny. So my siblings
find it funny. Where you have to be there to get the humor. Because I think that is hilarious, yeah. And it reminds me of when my aunt was dying, yeah.
The statement. We are horrible human beings.
There was like 10 of us in the room. And like, we're all like curved around the bed, yeah. So I can see her, but I'm not really watching, yeah. And then the main, like, there was like a nurse in the room. I don't know if she's even a nurse, but let's say she was a nurse, and let's say it was a senior nurse. So when she passed, the senior nurse went to my aunt's mum, yeah, who in terms of like, just for context, in terms of like family tree, this is actually like my great nan. So she's quite old, like 80s, 90s, yeah. She went to my aunt's mum, and she was in a wheelchair, and she got on her, like, she bent down to her level, and she was like, no, I'm just trying to communicate to you, like, that she's dead, yeah. And then my uncle, who's Rasta, go, what, she dead?
No sympathy, no softness.
She's dead now. And at the time, yeah, it actually wasn't funny. I feel like now is the only time I've been able to really laugh about it. Because me and my brother, I remember, we was the last people with my aunt. So, like, everyone left. And me and my brother was there for hours and hours after. And then eventually, the nurse was kind of like, even unhealthy for you to be here at this point. So we left. But in that time, me and my brother was saying, like, if he was watching a film, that would have been a hilarious scene because of how, like, funny it was. Like, the same uncle, yeah. Why was he trying to give her rum?
What?
Yeah, like she was like, oh, before it happened, maybe just give her some rum on her lip. And we're all like, no, like, no.
Okay, do you know what's funny? Is that in my mom's culture, you are supposed to give 3 drops of holy water in the person's mouth before they pass. So when they're literally just about to pass, you give them holy water. I guess in some context that could look like rum.
No, it doesn't look like rum. The Bible does not say that Jesus broke bread and had rum or courvoisier.
But there are so many, like, some of these rituals that we embrace are so, well, just funny and hilarious. So again, not a funny story, but I remember my mom obviously going into a coma over time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, what's the right time to pour this holy water that I have into her mouth? And so every time I would come over and like try to like pour the drops of holy water, she'd be like, what are you doing? And like wake up out of like trying to fight the coma and be mm-hmm. like, why do you keep trying to pour that into my mouth? Because at this point in time, she didn't even remember. Mm-hmm. And it was just like this funny like moment of when is it going to happen and trying to track it. Obviously, I didn't think it was funny at the time, but it was actually quite funny.
Like, nobody was laughing in the thing. Can I tell you one more story?
Yes. We need to do a whole episode about grief and laughter.
I love grief and trauma.
Funny stories, yeah.
So when she was passing, yeah, my and I hope people listening are also finding it funny. Otherwise, please just skip. but people, when she was passing, my cousin was like laying on her and hugging her, yeah. I think it was after, no, when she had passed, my cousin was like laying on her. Not laying, this sounds very like invasive, but do you get what I mean? She was hugging her, basically.
I know exactly what you mean. I was, yeah, same thing, yeah.
Yeah. So people have started to leave the room. And the same uncle, by the way. He's tapping her like, hello? Tapping my cousin.
What? I thought you meant
No, my cousin. Because he's trying to tell her that she's leaving. He's leaving, but this is not the time. Just leave. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, she's leaving her dead mom. Cute. He's like, hello? Hello? Yeah. This is not the time for that. I remember me and my brother looked at each other like, oh, and she's even doing this, like she's fanning him away, like just doesn't even know it's him. She's not facing the room. She's just like, go. And he's like, yo, all right, call me later. Call you later. This is not a dance. He doesn't want to call you or even her husband later. Thank you very much. But yeah, to respond to that, I completely agree. Like, in the same way we're able to laugh about that now, I do think there is something to be said about like laughing through trauma and pain, typically when you've got through it. And I think it's fun. I think it's nice. Like, even talking to you now, I've been able to laugh about that, even shows like the journey that I've been on myself. And I find it quite refreshing as well. Yeah, so I didn't really mean that in terms of my point before. I meant more in terms of like skimming over things because I haven't acknowledged it as pain or trauma myself.
Fair,
so
fair.
For you to just like going on. But no, that was a funny
segue.
I need to send that to someone in a movie scene because it'd actually be hilarious.
People are going to cancel us on this podcast.
They're going to hate us. I'm so sorry, guys. Sorry. But at least we're laughing now, okay? We are laughing now. And if anyone's listening, they're going through grief, just know you'll be able to laugh soon, okay?
There will come a time.
There will. It won't feel like it, though. Fucking hell. Anyway. Okay, guys. So that was a very interesting episode. We definitely dug deep. Deep into laughter, deep into pain, deep into triumph, deep into trauma. I hope you loved this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. Make sure you like and subscribe if you liked it. And maybe even leave a review. We'd love to know what you guys are thinking.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
This is a message from Acast.
We don't all get a good innings in life. I'm Andrew Strauss, and I lost my wife, Ruth, to cancer in 2018. One of the hardest things about an incurable cancer diagnosis is talking to your children about it. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is here to help. We support parents to prepare their children to face grief. You can help. Join in our Red for Ruth fundraising campaign. At the Ruth Strauss Foundation, we believe no family should have to face grief alone.
Celebrate 125 years of great value at Morrisons with 25% off when you buy 6 or more bottles of wine, including champagne. Choose from over 270 bottles. That's more cheers in this summer.
Morrisons to shop at Morrisons.
Majority of stores subject to availability. Online varies. Exclude Scotland. Max 36 bottles in store. 6 online per customer. Ends 21st of July. Please drink responsibly.